If I were to throw my name in this waiver period, where do you think a good landing spot would be for me?
If you were to throw your name in for this waiver period, I think that there's quite a few teams that could use you, Robert. You can play a left side, weak side, and a right side, strong side. That not many people can
it's
do.
True.
Not many people can
rare skill set. Rare skill set.
To be honest with you, I would say half the teams or more in the league would have some form of upgrade with you in the lineup.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
La 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 la. That's what I do before broadcasting. I mean, I go through my vocal cord. I go through the whole spiel. No, actually, I do not do that, Robert. Robert, I have one question for you. Mm-hmm. Are you across the pond right now?
I am across the pond pickleball. Pickleball. What is pickleball?
Pickleball. That's fantastic. And the word on the street is we have over 2K players in an international event. Is that correct?
Those are the rumors swirling in the pickle sphere, if you will.
Rumor has it. She's from England, isn't she, Adele? Yeah. Am I wrong?
I think you're right.
Okay.
I think you're right.
All right. Let's go.
Thank you.
Let's go.
I wouldn't have even known that was Adele singing that song. That's her?
I'm a big Adele guy. So is my father-in-law. Big Adele guy.
Oh, that's nice that you guys can connect on Adele.
Yeah, you know, you gotta find some common ground, Robert. You know, you do.
You do. You do. Uh-huh. I mean, more than just his daughter.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. What? So who are you playing with in this tournament, Robert?
I am playing with Ryler DeHart.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Or, you know, as people sometimes like to call him, Megan Fudge's husband. and also Susanna Barr.
So we got double left side Robert in this tournament.
Yeah. Yep.
Double left side Robert. Yep. Ooh, I love that.
Yep. Playing a little sliver on the left while my partners do a lot of work.
Yeah, I like that. Hey, so have you, I got my SoCal boys, Purple Jesus, Max Manthau, and Eric Lang coming over there. Have you ever played Purple before?
No, never.
Please God, hit him with some Flippy Long Stockings. Just do it.
I'll have to be on the right, which Ryler and I will do quite a bit because we won't unwind sometimes. So yeah, I'll give him some flips. Flips the right shoulder.
Just hold it for like 18 seconds and then just flip it, Rob.
I'll go right shoulder, then I'll go a couple down the line to his left hip, and then I'll go straight into his chest.
Oh, God, yes. Please do it. And I want to see this video badly.
Just getting tangled.
That's the way to do it. I mean, sometimes they catch on, sometimes they don't, but that's how you have to start. You must.
I just got to be over there on the right, though. You know. We've talked about it, Adam. I can make dinks all day from the left. I won't miss much. So if I need to just be solid over there, if I'm playing the left is like with a big right, like Ryler can do it. Jack Monroe, who I'm playing with the rest of the year, can do it. I think I need to develop a little bit of a better two-handed roll dink. You know, a little late to that game. I'm just solid on the backhand, not missing dinks, but I don't feel like I have a lot I can do necessarily weapons-wise compared to the right side. The right side, I feel like I have unlimited options in terms of what I can, like places I can go. And, you know, I've got a little, disguise slice speed up down the line that I hold to the last second. I've got, you know, obviously the flicks out of the air, the flicks off the bounce. The backhand side, just I don't have as many options. I don't cover as much court. I'm not as long as I need to be. So it limits me a little bit, and I don't like being limited.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Well, at least you don't have the full-on yips on your backhand like I do.
On the backhand dink or what?
I can't hit it. Like, I can't hit it. So I can dink my backhand, and if they hit it hard at me, I can counter. But other than that, it could be a fourth or a sixth shot or a speed up. My technique is flawed, and I literally can't hit it. Like, it might go 25 feet out or into the bottom of the net. So that's the state of my game right now, Robert. So regardless of what happens with you, you're going to be head and shoulders above me from the left. So you can put that in your back pocket and know that.
Adam, are there any players that you have watched recently that doesn't put, no, I'm not talking like on a soft dink or neutral dink from the kitchen on the back end, like hitting a two-handed backhand there. Are there any players that you see right now that aren't putting two hands on, whether it be a counter, whether it be digging out a ball, any kind of, like block? Like, are you seeing anybody that has yet to go fully to a two-hander as well, just as an addition, not full-time?
Man, wow. That we might be here a while for me to think about that. It's even like for instance, Hard Eight's member Eric Lang, who is a thunder punching guy, a one-handed guy. He goes to two now. He dinks with two. He will occasionally put that second hand for support on a counter attack or a speed up. So I would have to ponder that for a while. And even say Federico, who has that one-handed speed up that he can kind of go off the bounce with one. He's two-handed now in a lot of different situations. Ben, who wasn't, now is. Now, I mean, there's a variety of players that even if they're heavier one-handed from a percentage that they use it perspective, there is situations where they add the second. So, I think your statement is correct. You are late to that game, Robert. And really the only one I can think of is me. So, and I don't matter. So, that's really all I have, as it's just, when I broke in, like if you saw somebody hitting with two hands, you thought it was wild. It was like someone playing ping pong with two hands. You're like, what is this person doing? It was no different when you first got into pickleball, and now it's almost a necessity. And it's a long time, 5 or 6 years, but it's really not that long. And when you're thinking of like sports and strategic stuff and whatever else.
I was just going to say, like, I'll put two hands on a dink and I feel pretty good, like rolling that. I just won't do it often because one, I pop it up too much. I haven't spent that much time practicing that shot, considering I haven't practiced any shots. I just go play tournaments, basically.
Hey, dude, you'll ship one two hands off the bounce cross court every now and then, Robert.
No, I do it like on a neutral ball into somebody's chest, but they let it go and it goes in oftentimes. I can get more top spin off a two-handed backhand roll off the bounce than I can off pretty much any shot for whatever reason. I can just generate more dip on it. But the issue is I feel so uncomfortable putting two hands on a counter. I don't know what it is. It just doesn't feel like I would be able to. It feels like my one-handed backhand counter is so much stronger than if I go two. I just don't understand how. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's times where I don't hit it necessarily cleanly and it's a little off, and I don't feel like as strong as maybe as if I would have had two hands on it, but I don't know. I see a lot, like pretty much everybody has gone to a two hand counter on some occasion, not all the time, but I just haven't found that occasion where I feel like I would be better with it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't matter, but I'm the same way. I even tinkered when I was playing with two hands.
Yeah.
Just extremely awkward. And it felt less awkward on like dinking, but countering, like, I mean, I could be doing a drill focusing on it and I couldn't do it. Like I would just start going one again. Like I couldn't even like get over the hump to even like try to consistently over and over again. So I just was like, scrap it. That's just not for me. But now it's almost a necessity at this point.
It's getting there for sure. If it's not already,
that's where we're at. Yeah, that's exactly where we're at. Well, Robert, were you able to watch any MLP Kansas City this weekend?
A little bit. I wasn't able to watch a ton, but I watched a little bit. Yeah.
Hey, guess what? It was hot.
That's the word on the street. You know. I saw some suggestions. Should summer be the off season? What can we do? What could we possibly do to make sure that it's not too hot for players and it's safe? I don't know, Adam.
You're welcome.
What can we do?
I'm a good partner. What can we do? I set you up. I knew you were going to run with it. I don't even have to give you any runway. You're going to take off with that one. But it was pretty wild. And it was, of course it was affecting the ball. And, there were some instances. I saw Viv David over on the sidelines with bags of ice on her. On her neck. Jill Braverman was struggling for the Bay Area Breakers. And that was like a main focus. Sure, the hard eights, we talked a little strategy. But like managing the day and like bringing a cooler with us and having ice packs and all that stuff was a pretty dang big factor in this tournament, especially on Sunday when we had two matches in that day. So, it was pretty wild with the heat, and the ball was playing very soft as well. So, just some of the conditions that were going on in Kansas City. Good pickleball either way. But just I think we always talk about it from a player perspective. But I think we should maybe talk about it a little bit from a fan perspective. How hard is it to go out and just watch a day of pickleball 6 to 8 hours when the heat is that oppressive at 93, 94 plus? With not every single seat in the championship or grandstand stadium having access to shade, so it was something, that's for sure.
I will say, in respect to outdoor pickleball, one really cool aspect of it, and this is a rarity to hear me say anything that could possibly be construed as a positive for outdoor pickleball, but playing under the lights, under good lights outside, like where it's even like a summer where it's warmer at night, it's still fine because the sun's not beating down on you, but playing picky under the lights and kind of like a MLP stadium atmosphere, that's legit. That's fun. So outdoor pickleball at night, and it's less windy. There's no wind at night. That's the play. Outdoor pickleball at night.
So we're talking like a first couple rounds in the heat of the day, like a 2 p.m. start or something like that. And then as you work into the quarter, semis, and beyond, you're just rocking it till like 9 or 10 p.m. maybe later.
No, not really, because I think that's that goes against what I'm saying. I'm saying, if there's a scenario for like MLP, for example, where you just line up night matches
only,
maybe you start at 7 p.m. and you roll the, like, look at it like the U.S. Open night session, right? Mm-hmm. It starts at 7 p.m. Sometimes it rolls till 2 a.m. Whatever. They have 5-set matches. MLP is pretty consistent on time. You start at 7, next match at 9, finish by 11, two courts going. I think that's a super fun play. And I think outside of that, though, we don't play pickleball outside during the day, Adam. Mm-hmm. It's just a non-negotiable. Non-negotiable. We don't do it.
And I'll say this now. Granted, you're going to occasionally run into a problem. But I think intoxicated fans are the best fans. Well, or how about
of
this?
Of course.
Slightly buzzed. We'll say slightly buzzed fans. And there's been a couple situations where, especially, I have been to the night session at the U.S. Open. And nighttime breeds a little bit of beer and wine and spirit drinking. So that is a fun atmosphere also. I'm just adding to the list here. So carry on.
You get it. You get it. I mean, that was an easy sell. I mean, you get it. So yeah, outdoor pickleball at night, no problem. Rest of the time, indoors. Let's go. Yeah. Other than SoCal. SoCal, whatever.
SoCal, whatever.
Play out.
Doesn't even
matter. Do whatever you guys want. Yeah. With your silly, perfect weather.
With your silly, but
everywhere else in the country.
Weather.
Let's go inside.
Actually, so after this event, so this Thursday and Friday, Thursday premiere, Friday challenger, we're going to have a little waiver wire. So there should be some fun stuff going on there, especially in the challenger division. I'm sure there's going to be some drops and adds, maybe a couple trades, possibly a trade between premier and challenger. Haven't heard anything in concrete, but that'll be a fun little update here in the next few days. I also heard a little buzz. This is not confirmed by any means that there could possibly be next year, 2025. A stretch where it's just the MLP season. So instead of PPA, MLP, PPA, MLP, and kind of going back and forth, there could be a stretch or a block of like 3 months or something like that where it's just MLP and then the rest of the year will be PPA tournaments. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. I think it creates, let's call it a three-month season, similar to other pro sports, right? I don't think we need to go all year. Have a three-month season where you're able to really track what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And really have the tension build up and have each week lead to the next storyline or the next matchup. And that stays consistent throughout versus, you know, now we have a Kansas City PPA tournament where it goes back and then, you know, we go to another MLP. It's right. Just, it does get confusing for the fans. I think having just a consistent 3 month season would be super dope and be fun to watch. And you'd get excited about the MLP season. And then once it's over, you'd be pumped to see tournaments again and the, you know, normal partnerships and see what's going on there. I like that. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's like the diehards don't matter. The diehards are going to be fans. They're junkies. They're in. They need their fix, you know? So it's
they'll watch everything. It doesn't matter what
right. It's all about the casual fan. So I think I agree with that completely as well. When you have storylines stacked and it's 1 week later or possibly 2 weeks later as opposed to 4 or 6 weeks and you're kind of bouncing around between standard tournaments, it can kind of get lost in translation what everyone's playing for and what it means. So, just very, very briefly, you know, heard a conversation or talked to somebody that mentioned that could be a possibility, and I'm with you. I like it a lot, too.
Yeah, I like that. I did have – so I was hanging out with Greg Dow this past weekend, and we were chatting. And
it's already obviously a good story.
It's not a good story. I mean, there's plenty of good stories within this weekend, starting off with, like, this hotel we were staying at. I go up to the room. I'm taking a shower, going to bed. Greg hasn't checked into the hotel yet. I get a call, like three calls, seven texts. And it's just, hey man, can you come down to the lobby? I'm like, okay, come down to the lobby. Uh-huh. He's like, yeah, you know, long story, lost my wallet. Can you put your card down for the deposit so I could check in? I'm like, sure, Greg. Sure. How are you operating without a wallet? Like, how are you traveling? How are you operating? And how are you not stressed out about it? He doesn't care. He's like, whatever, but you know, I'll figure it out. He's a unique character.
Well, if you wouldn't have come down there, he would not have figured it out, Rob. So,
I don't know. Like, what would he have done? Would he have asked a stranger for it? Would he have, like, there had to be a physical card. He had his card number. They couldn't take that. They needed a physical card.
Yeah, maybe he could Venmo a random stranger and have him do that. So he lost his wallet.
That's if he had his phone, which he usually doesn't have his phone with him either.
But he's flying, so he had to have his wallet.
Yeah, I don't know what he did.
So, yeah, special human. I saw him up at MLP Kansas City, at least for a brief moment. I think he was on the mic a couple times. He actually might have been on the mic. No, that was – there was Roddy. So there are some characters on the mic this weekend too. So we had Roddy, Dow, and AJ Kohler jumping in. One of the Hard Eights matches was AJ Kohler and Roddy. And then our last match of the weekend was Wyatt Stone and Big H. with the guest appearance from Anna Bright and Gabe Tardio kind of lingering in the back, occasionally saying something. So it was, I don't always go back and watch, but I watched that one and it was pretty dang hilarious. I'm not sure how hilarious it would have been for a casual fan, but it was pretty dang funny for me to listen to those two.
Again, that's great. It's great for the diehards, right? Because they get like the context of what's happening and who these people are. Casual fans probably just like, what is happening? Yeah.
Big H, he's got something about him that, I don't know, just even if he says something vanilla or plain, it's still kind of funny. I don't know. I think some people just have that. Not everyone does, but I think H has it.
Because you just don't really know if he's like ever, like the snarky versus the regular is a very like fine line, right? You don't know if he's like being serious, if he's like talking shit, if he's, you just don't know. So it makes everything feel like he's talking.
Yeah, that's right. So I think there is a random, every so often, genuine comment coming out of his mouth, but most of it is talk. So it all just kind of blends together and becomes one. So
I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item and a carry-on on most carriers. And both items are big backpacks. I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry-on. So I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days. So I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big, you need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. I can put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
Adam, if I were to throw my name in this waiver period, where do you think a good landing spot would be for me?
Robert, if you were to throw your name in for this waiver period, I think that there's quite a few teams that could use you, Robert. You can play a left side, weak side, and a right side, strong side. That not many people can do.
True.
Not many people can do.
Rare skill set.
And that's impressive. That's impressive. Yep. Not everyone has that. So I would say, to be honest with you, I would say half the teams or more in the league would have some form of upgrade with you in the lineup. And yeah. I also know that as an older gentleman, you will be just fine 4 points at a time playing singles as well, striping some money. Forehand passes. So, I think there's a lot of spots. And I'm really wondering if we're going to get some wild action or just a couple moves at this waiver wire in a couple days. Cause I think some, you know, as you get deeper into the season, some of those teams that have low points per match or don't haven't accumulated what they want, they start really going for it in terms of changing up team dynamics and team chemistry and things of that nature, where after one or two events, you kind of want to hold pat and see what you have. And now we're getting to the point where, if it's not working, let's make a change.
Yeah, I know Real Clear Stats. They have kind of a standings list, and they also have a requested like a last column being how many matches you've played and how many matches you have remaining on the year.
And they did it.
And that's it's cool to see it too, right? Because like now you know, okay, this team's in first, but they have, you know, the fewest matches remaining. This team in sixth has a bunch of matches remaining and a bunch of ground they can make up. So I like that. But I don't even know what I was going to say after that. But
well, I'll get you. Well, yeah. It's like a perfect example. It's like the fives, Annalie Waters, Mari Humberg, Will Howes, Zane Navratil. They've played 9 matches. And the top teams, like the Dallas Flash, St. Louis, they've played 17. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's wild. So they only have 6 left, those top teams, where the Fives have 14 left. So there can be a lot of moving and shaking, and you can make a run too, especially, you know, they always talk about this in football and baseball, like strength of schedule, you know? So if you're one of those teams that has a ton of matches left and you have a weaker strength of schedule, my goodness, yeah, you can make a run hot. And I mean, well, let's talk about my boys and my girls, the Heart Eights. 1-5 in Atlanta.
Yeah.
1-5 in Atlanta, and have just been on a steamroll right now. And we found ourselves in second place, just below the Brooklyn Aces. So things can change quickly when you can accumulate 3 points for a regulation win multiple times over and over again. So it's pretty fun. And it's going to be even more fun as we get tighter and tighter. We got Virginia Beach, we got New York, we got Miami, just a handful of tournaments left, and there's going to be some moving and some shaking.
Yeah, how many MLPs are left, and which one's next?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there is, there's four, and we only play two as the Heart Eights. I believe that is correct. We have quite a few at Virginia Beach. The next one, I think, is New York. And you know, this is something that I should absolutely know, and I do not. But I think that is correct. And so it's gonna be real tight. And you know, top two and Challenger. Who knows what might change? But top two and Challenger with that automatic bid to Premier, and then also
not top four. I thought it was top four for whatever reason.
Top two for the automatic bid. So you're gonna have to play through the playoffs to get the other two. That's correct. So
those other two, the top two and Challenger, they didn't even play the playoffs. They're just in.
So no, I think yowza.
Or they still play? Maybe.
I think they still play it, but they just make it. And then also, if you were the top two seeds, you get a variety of advantages. You don't even have to play a match first off, because you get a bye through. So basically six people will make the playoffs and four people will play for two spots, and then they will play those top two teams in the semifinals.
Oh, I see.
And you also, and you also get to, like, you get like all four choices. You get to react to mixed, you get to pick side, you get to pick. Yeah. So there is big advantages.
But as the top two seeds, you still have to win those matches to get the top two.
Say that again. You
Are you saying, so like the top two in the regular season advance to basically the semis?
Correct.
And they get all those advantages. Uh-huh. But just because you got top two in the season standings doesn't mean you automatically advance, right?
No. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you have to get to the finals, essentially,
correct,
of the tournament.
Yes. You have to
got
get
it, got
you,
it, got
you're,
it.
You're just in the semifinals, but you have to win that match. Yeah. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
But and I think that it kind of is a delicate balance, because with how it's set up, there really should be huge benefits for regular season performance. I mean, that's a bulk of the season. But at the same time, there's been a couple people that have mentioned that it might be too much, not having to play a whole match and getting all the choices. But I don't think I agree.
I don't think it's too much. I think you're absolutely right. I think you have a full season body of work. You've earned those top two spots. And as we see, there's already so much variance and possibilities of upsets and MLP that as the top two seeds, you really deserve those little nuances to set yourself up, because you've earned it. I think giving them just the buys and then playing straight up, you know, anything could happen. It's MLP, but giving them kind of all the choices is, I think that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, we're talking 23 regular season matches. You perform in that big giant.
It's like the one game playoff for baseball.
Yeah.
Insane
wild
stuff, you know, like, oh my God, dude.
Yeah. One game, 162, the 163rd game. I mean, think about that. You know, that's like,
who's got the ace? That's basically it. Who's got the,
correct,
who's got the ace?
Yeah. The ace matters. And it's wild that all that, you know, that's less than 1% of the games that they've played for the season. And that's what can carry them into the playoffs. Now, granted, before they made that rule, they had no shot. They were already out. So I throw that in there, but it still seems wild to have a one game playoff, especially for baseball. So, fun event, you know, good pickleball, of course. I talked to Corey, the GM for the New York Hustlers, and he's pretty excited about kind of the layout and the setup they have for the New York tournament. I think there's going to be good fan experience. They have some solid seating and bleacher setup throughout some pretty heavy numbers in terms of the seating and all that stuff. So I think that it's going to be, like I said, always get good pickleball at the MLP events, but I think this is going to be great for the fans, which is important.
What's the venue?
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea whatsoever. He just explained it to me. I don't even know what it was. I know it's not.
Did it sound like it was indoors?
No idea. he said there's this little like S thing, this little S that goes like through both courts, like for the VIP. I believe he said 2K seats for the championship and a high number of seats for the grandstand as well. So that's pretty exciting.
That'll be cool. How many teams are going to that one? Do you know?
I like asking you
all the detailed questions about the future
questions of the events that I'm
Adam,
not
what's
going
the date?
To.
I don't care.
I don't know. We're not going. We're working on us, Robert. I will be fanboying though. I will be fanboying and I will be watching and I will be, you know, taking some notes and doing some scouting and maybe having an adult beverage while I do it.
Hey, that sounds like not watch a little pickle, have a little beer. What's up?
Chase AJ around the living room a little bit. You know, that's a lovely weekend afternoon.
It's beautiful. Are you in Kansas City this whole week? You look like you're in a hotel room right now.
Never left. Yeah, I haven't left. So I would have been able to go home for one day, but I start I start tomorrow with the commentary with old Drew Felios. I don't think I've ever worked with him before, so that'll be fun. And then Dave and myself will have Friday, Saturday, and Championship Sunday. So, speaking of that,
a long weekend ahead of you.
I know, I do. It's a long time to be away from the little one, but you know, when I go home, I don't have a ton of responsibility other than him, family stuff. So I'll get like 10 or 11 days just
me fully
and,
dialed.
Me and the guy dialed in. Changing diapers, doing the thing. So actually I wrote down, so I'm using my iPad to be on this podcast. So I don't have all my little, stats at my fingertips, but I wrote down some partnerships for the PPA Kansas City coming up and a couple that were kind of exciting. So, first and foremost, I just scrolled down one or two spots in the men's doubles and I saw Hayden Patraquin and Christian Alshon. That is a pretty
formidable,
talented team. I thought about it a little bit in terms of right side, left side, but I would expect Christian to play right and Hayden to play left, and then
that's what I would have said too.
Maybe some flexibility to possibly play straight up or mix it up if they get in some trouble. But that's a ton of talent. Love H, man. I just don't get it. Every time I watch him and his little backhand flick, it's. Like I just don't get it. One, I don't have that shot, and two, with such a slight frame, how is he getting so much action on that ball? It is absolutely a world class shot.
It's and it's crazy because we've talked about, you know, height, we've talked about wingspan. I mean, he must have decent wingspan because he's able to reach in really strong and really. Like a net high ball, even a little below the net, he's able to get so much pace on the ball, and I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. it's like J Dubs is a little different. It's kind of similar, but his wrist is much stiffer, I would say.
Yes.
Stronger too, probably. And H is more like, it's like elastic, like Gumby a little bit, where it's just like, it just is like very flingy, but he gets so much pop off of it.
Yeah, he does. I think that's a really fair statement. Just slightly more firm with the JW, and it's just the range of motion for H on that shot and the paddle head speed is silly. And I think Christian Alshon too had kind of a small issue, had a minor surgery, and actually missed an MLP event. And I think that his game's been building a little bit since then. So, saw him play a little bit for the Texas Ranchers, who have been having some really good success. So I think kind of moving away from maybe some of that rust and that, couple weeks of not playing, his game's just building more and more. So, I expect, I don't think anybody wants to play that team. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do we think, because there's some guys that have had, like Brandon French, that have had pretty significant, and he's very wristy. He had the tomahawk. Like he was kind of I saw the first time he hurt his wrist, we were supposed to be playing Newport together. And you were there. I remember you being there. And mm-hmm. we were playing a practice game against somebody. And he did the tomahawk. And then he had to pull out of the tournament. So with all of the wrist action that we're seeing now with, like, these flicks and like, do you think there's going to be a real uptick in wrist injuries?
That's a good question. You know, everyone's playing about, I don't know, somewhere between 8 and 10 ounces. So, you know, that's, you know, significantly less than a tennis racket. I know another one to throw into that mix is DJ Young. DJ Young's had some issues with the wrist stuff as well. Yeah. So
also tomahawk.
So I would say maybe a slight uptick, but not, I would be shocked if it just starts, you know, like becoming an injury, like tennis elbow or something like that. But this is what you have to do now. Like you can't, like you need the action, you need the spin, you need the pace with these flicks. And the thing is the amateurs and the lower level players, you know, using the wrist, it's just almost not worth it because they can't control it and they can't be consistent with it. But these guys now, so if you can have that baseline of consistency, you need to continue to add. You need that margin for error. You need the spin. You need the power. So I would expect, as long as they're able to control it, and of course the world-class players can, that they're going to continue to add more and more wrist action with the shots moving forward.
Yeah. And we don't, it's so interesting though, because we don't really see as much of it on the forehand side, where it's like, even just out of the air on the forehand side, I think guys are hitting it harder with their backhand.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't know why exactly. I guess it's just a little bit easier to roll over on the backhand side. I can get a little, it seems pretty even for me, like in terms of the windshield wiper, kind of the forearm slash wrist strength. But
it's just the wrist also going just different directions, right? Like my wrist is much more like Gumby-esque on the backhand. I feel like I can come back much further.
Uh-huh.
On the forehand, I feel like it's a bit more stuck.
It's opening up the palm. You can only go so far on the forehand, but the backhand, you can really, you can, like you're talking about, like the,
like coming all the way back and just through. Like,
so you get, you can have a little, you have a couple extra inches or a little bit of extra fling, if you will, to come through on the backhand side. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense for sure. So
the crazy part with Big Age is like not only just the power he can get, but he's not tall.
No,
he must have like crazy. I don't know, but he gets these when he's on the left, he gets these backhand flicks that have wild cross court angles.
Yes, yeah,
that shouldn't be able to happen. Like I'm not talking like Big Age isn't just like power deep into the court. He has heavy power pace pushing it off the court,
like Humburg. It's like Humburg.
Yeah.
Similar. Yeah, wild. I repeat myself for the 30th time. I don't get it. I don't have it. And good for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Another one I saw is old. I just had to mention old Hard Eights buddies. Both players getting better and both players already very good. But CJ Klinger and Todd Foate, I don't believe that I have seen that in a PPA tournament. So I think they could do some damage. Todd is playing well. And, of course, CJ is growing. We have seen this matchup before, Xiaomei and Tyson, and I think they've played a couple times together with one very good run. I know they're familiar with each other. Xiaomei's gone up to train up in Coeur d'Alene a couple times, so possibly they could make another run. And then here, this one is fairly sexy, kind of like the first one. We have a Federico Stakrud and a Gabe Tardio matchup, which I think could certainly do some damage, especially with, I mean, I can't say this anymore because Fed is just so consistent and he can create plenty of offense from the left. But I always thought that just his overall raw power was one of the tools that he didn't have in spades like some of the other top guys do. So a right side power speed up player and Gabe Tardio could pair very nicely with Fed. So any thoughts on any of those teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think that team could do a lot of damage, could beat anybody. I think Todd and CJ could do very well, too. I wouldn't put them quite in the same boat
I would agree with that.
Fed and Tardio.
I think
you're right. I think Fed being a rock on the left, making a ton of balls, playing not so dissimilar from like an Andre, who mm-hmm. Tardio's played quite a bit with, makes a lot of sense. I think Andre's the same way. He needs a guy on the right that can create offense. I would say Fed has a bit more offense than Andre. Andre has better defense and grabs more balls and gets more balls
length.
In play.
Yeah.
More length as well. But I think, yeah, absolutely right. I think it's interesting to see like those guys that are just steady on the left that have some offense, but not crazy. They're not going to, you know, really light you up or anything crazy like a Fed or an Andre. Like they really do need offensive right side guys, which it's like, it's an interesting evolution too, right? Like the, you know, what everybody looked to be was the Ben and Colin, where Colin really is like rarely speeding up. It's very rare. And he's just being solid and dinking. And then Ben's coming over and doing all the offense. It's changed a bit, right? It's like, now you need guys on the right that can be dangerous. The way I'm thinking about it is like, you don't really want to have any safe places for the other team to hit, right? You want to be able to have offense from every part of the kitchen, and if you don't have it yet, you're going to have to start developing it, because I think as the game keeps moving forward and keeps evolving, the windows and areas where you're safe on the court, like right now you're pretty safe at somebody's left foot if they're on the right, it's going to be changing. They're going to be able to do an Anna Lee where they can take a two-handed backhand roll inside out across the kitchen, or they can speed it up right to you know the left side player's left hip right in front of them. Or she could speed up in the middle. I think the windows are getting smaller of safe areas on the court, and it's fun. It's a fun evolution.
Yeah, I think Tardio is a perfect example of that. Last couple of times I've seen him play, when his partner is cross court dinking left to left, he's straddling the center line. He's not hanging out on his side, and he has a really nice initiation of a backhand flick from the middle of the court. So I think that is a dangerous pairing, and it'll be interesting to see exactly how much court Tardio is playing with Fed, and kind of where, you know, if the, is this a, you know, a full-on 2-to-1 situation, 66-33, or is it a little bit closer to 50-50 for those two? Fun team to watch either way. Women, yep. We have Hurricane Tyra Black and Vivian Glosman. I don't believe I've seen that before, and if it has, it's only been for a small amount of tournaments, but I think that's a pairing that could work well. Glosman playing a nice right side. I would guess Hurricane's going to be on the left, but maybe that's a little more fluid than I'm thinking. I just feel like I've been seeing Glosman a lot on the right, and she seems to be embracing it. So that could be a tough team. A player that we just talked about, Mari Humberg, pairing up with Georgia Johnson. They had a nice run at an early PPA and Mesa, kind of a fill-in situation when Georgia's partner went down. And I believe they made a run to the semifinals or championship Sunday. And I don't believe I've seen Leia and Tina. Is that wrong? Have you seen Leia and Tina? I don't know if I have.
I don't remember if it's happened. It might have happened, but
yeah, that one too. I would expect Leia to be on the right and Tina on the left. Anything stick out for those? Well, mostly there was more interesting matchups on the men's side. A lot more of the standard stuff, you know, like with Edda, Megan, CP, Annalie, that kind of stuff. Those three matchups. Anyone that piques your interest or might work well for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of this also is just dependent on conditions and weather. Is it going to stay super hot over the weekend?
No.
And okay.
It drops like wild. It's going to be in the low 80s. Even on Saturday, Sunday, I believe it was like high of 78. So that we're talking like a 10 to 15 degree difference in the play for the PPA as opposed to the MLP. So the conditions are absolutely different.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point on Hurricane and Glaz, I think that suits them. They have good power. If they're going to play in the dead heat and have the softer ball and play the Kawamotos or somebody, it's going to be tough sledding.
Right.
But if the ball is flying and staying a little hard, they could rip through some people. I mean, they're probably, I would say, the most powerful power wise in the bracket in the draw. Mm-hmm.
And if the conditions are playing a little cooler, then they could do some real damage. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. So, we'll just go ahead and cap it off with a couple mixed teams as well. We have Edda and Alshon, which makes sense as they are Ranchers teammates in MLP. We have CP and Fed, Catherine and Fed.
That's an interesting one, yeah.
Yeah, Jackie, Kawamoto, and Augie. And Glosman and Tyson. And once again, that some of these teams might have played once or twice together, but for the most part, these are very fresh new partnerships on the mixed side, and a couple interesting ones for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, CP Fed. Yeah, that's like, I mean, that's,
they're going to be so annoying. They'd be so annoying to play.
So annoying. That's a high floor team right there. If they're able to, you know, find some consistent offense from somewhere, find some patterns that they're able to do some damage with from an offensive perspective, we know the defense and the ball making is going to be there. And yes, I think that playing them, a good word to describe that would be very annoying.
Yeah, they're just going to make so many balls and wait for the, like, you're going to have to beat them. Like, they're not going to beat themselves. They're going to, yeah. So it's going to have to come up to, it's going to come down to somebody that, or a team that has big shot making ability to take them down.
Yeah. You just have to overwhelm them. You're not going to out pattern them.
Not going to outlast them.
Outball make them. No, that's not going to be a thing. So you're just going to have to, any little smidgen of anything that they give you, you're going to have to take it and kind of try to blow them off the court, is definitely going to be the play. And plenty of teams can do that. I also think the Jackie Augie is an interesting team as well, as Jackie can, you know, a little more offensive than Jade Kawamoto, and Augie plays a quality mix. He's had a couple nice runs with Tyra, and his game seems to be, you know, slowly improving. Kind of really burst on the scene with a pretty high level quickly, and you know, I wouldn't say that he's jumped another level, but just consistently improving as you know, the rate at which people grow is very different for everyone, but I like a lot of what he brings to the table.
Yeah, they're going to be another tough team to beat. Jackie on the left is, you know, comfortable over there because Jade, you know, when she does play with Jade, Jade's on the right. So, yeah, they're going to be tough. Augie's got, I mean, there's, yeah, I agree with everything you said in terms of, you know, quick rise, don't want to even say maybe plateau, but just, yeah, consistent where he's at. And, but does have, like you said, good runs in mix and has good reach, good offense, can do some stuff off the bounce. It'll be, they're like, talk about firepower. They could be a tough team.
Yeah. Bounce attacks for the fella in mixed are just unbelievably important. Necessary. Just really, really. Yeah. And he can do it on both wings. But yeah, it's really fun to see the players that come in, and you just like, there is no blueprint to what growth is going to be. It's never, it's just jump here. You think someone's plateaued, then they take another leap. So there's those incrementally rising players. It's really fun to see the plateaus and the growth and the, sort of get figured out and then make another adjustment or add another tool to the toolbox. So it's really fun to see all these players that have, you know, been playing whatever pro pickleball for a year, 18 months, 2 years, and kind of how people figure them out and how they adjust. It's just such a cool sport. Easy to learn, hard to master, as we always say. And I think it's always going to be like that.
I will say, just talking about kind of that growth and the consistency and never know when somebody's going to get better. I was down in SoCal playing a tournament over there, and I was practicing some at the Hub in San Diego. Rob Cassidy, who, you know, we partnered together a couple years ago quite a bit. He put his name in for the MLP Australia draft and did not get picked up. And to me, that's people just no respect, dude. Even playing with him when I was down there, he's playing good pickleball, man. He's in my opinion, super underrated. He makes a lot of balls, has a nice drop. He's gotten better. He used to be a pretty big liability on backhand dinks. Like, you could just really target the backhand dink, but he's obviously worked on it, obviously improved. And to be honest, looking at the MLP Australia guys that are there and that have been drafted, I had put Rob Cassidy in like the top three.
Wow. Okay. That's blunder. A sad story. I love me some 22 Rob Cassidy, and he was just in the mix this past weekend on the practice courts, just incredibly nice. incredibly shirtless, just grinding it out for hours on end. Only thing better than Rob Cassidy is a shirtless Rob Cassidy. So that was a real treat, and I couldn't agree more. It's easy just, oh, he's been passed by. I'm not so sure. There's been multiple veterans that I thought were just going to be practically out of the sport or just not in the mix anymore to make runs. And they just kind of, they don't just go away. They just kind of hang out. Maybe that lights some fire in their belly and they get a couple extra shots or work a little bit harder off court, whatever the case may be. I don't think the working hard off court applies to Rob Cassidy, but I could be wrong. So it's fun. It's fun. You never know. Yeah. You can't count anyone out. You must always, especially as a GM and coach, you can't just decide that somebody doesn't have it anymore. You have to put in the hours. You have to watch and you have to see what's going on as anyone can reestablish themselves when they have that base of talent.
Yeah. And I think a piece of it is it's like the whole, as new players come in, new shots get developed, people will innovate, show that new stuff works. Everybody's forced to get better, right? Everybody is forced to learn that shot. Everybody's like, it's just all of the skills and talent coming in just raises everybody's level because paddles changing, new stuff. You could just do new stuff and it's changing all the time. So yeah, it's fun.
I agree. Well, that's all I got on my little notes here. Very official.
Tip.
My
very tip of the day. Tip of the day. People get upset when we don't do tip of the day.
Yes, we have flubbed that a couple times in the last 5 or 6 episodes or so. What you got? You got anything for us? Tell me. Talk to me.
Well, what have we talked about today? I think we've talked about
we could talk about wrist use. Sure. From the lower levels and
I teach them never to use it.
Right. And it's tough because I think that anyone who is a lower level player and is a fan of pro pickleball or pro sports in general, you want to copycat. You want to copycat. I very rarely use never or absolutely when I'm teaching, but you have to make sure that you don't go over that threshold of inconsistency, and it's so easy to do so. So I think. Yep. And we've talked a little bit about this kind of the progression of shots and skills. And I think that you have to maybe not master, but get close to it with a locked wrist on your shots before you start adding to it. And I don't think that that's a no. A no for your wrist, an absolute hard no for whatever, 3-5 to 4-5 players. But you have to get the technique and use kind of those bigger joints, the shoulder and the locked wrist, to be consistent before you really get freaky with the wrist stuff, because it's a fantastic shot when it works, but if it's working 1 out of 4 times, you're not going to improve like you want to, and the people that you're playing with in rec play and your group, the points are going to be shorter and not as clean and not as good, and it's going to be an everybody loses situation if you get carried away with it.
Yeah, and it's no different going into the higher levels, right? It's like it all comes down to decision making and playing the right shot, and trying to flick a ball with your wrist that's 6 inches below the net. Not high percentage for anybody, not even for on the pro side. So, it's developing it, but also knowing that at the end of the day that you have to play high percentage and you have to play the right shots, even in practice. You can want to work on stuff and want to work on flicks and want to work out on attacks out of the air. But at the end of the day, you want to practice playing high percentage.
Yeah.
And we talk about in this respect, Adam, and then I'll let you take that. We talk about playing to the better player in rec, and not just icing out that person so you get the win. You also have to be careful, right? Because you also don't want to get into the habit of just playing a shot to the better player, even if it's the wrong shot, right? If I'm dinking right in front of me to just because he's the better player, not necessarily the right thing to do. So you don't want to ice that person out, but you do want to play the shot that you would play in a match.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I even, just to touch on what I said earlier, I even kind of labeled that range 3-5 to 4-5. I think it even works for a talented 5-0 or qualifier player. Still be consistent with the regular plain shots that you need to set yourself up. I think just because a high-end tennis background or someone jumps on the scene who is clearly talented, they want to be JW or they want to be Hayden right off the bat. Even for a great player who has a chance to make it in pro, start playing, figure that stuff out, and then you can add other things or higher risk, high reward shots as you move through your progressions. So it's for all levels. It's not just I didn't want to just kind of pigeonhole that 3-5 to 4-5 level.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think the teams, you know, seeing these really talented teams come through qualies and stuff like that, or that are in qualifying, it's usually that they're overextending and trying to do too much versus just being patient and grinding and playing the right shot. So couldn't agree more.
Boom, shakalaka, done.
Bup, 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 bup.
Just two guys in two hotel rooms getting it done, Rob. Let's go.
Just, hey, high-end quality content creation, baby. Let's go. Till next time, fellas.
Out.